Welcome to Federal Insight, sponsored by Emergent BioSolutions. Our guest today is Miriam Delphin-Rittman, the Assistant Secretary for Mental Health and Substance Use at the Department of Health and Human Services. I'm your moderator, Scott Massioni. You know, the first question I wanted to ask you about is just the recent data on opioid use. Secretary, thank you for being here. The first thing I'm going to ask you about is the recent data that you have for substance abuse, now that you've had some recent updates from 2021.
Yes. Yeah, so what we're seeing is that, you know, the data definitely is showing that the U.S., that we're experiencing, I would say, the most significant substance use and overdose crisis that we've ever faced, really. As you know, we had new CDC data that came out, and that showed within the 12-month period ending in April 2021, we reached a really tragic milestone of over 100,000 overdose deaths. From the previous year. And this was a 30% increase. So we're seeing overdose rates continue to rise.
And those rates that you're seeing, I realize that you break those out into different types of drugs that are fall under the opioid category. So there are synthetic opioids as well as things that are more organic, like heroin itself. So could you talk a bit about the rise of the synthetic opioids and what you're seeing in terms of those versus the more organic ones?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, we're seeing that the synthetic opioids, so fentanyl and other fentanyl analogs, that they are present in about 85% of opioid-related overdoses and about 64% of all overdoses. So we're seeing quite a bit of fentanyl that's contributing to overdoses. And in fact, one of the reasons why SAMHSA, we now allow federal funds to be used to be able to purchase fentanyl test strips so that people can then identify that substance. So that was an important change that we added recently.
And what are the biggest concerns about synthetic use and synthetic drugs versus the ones, well, obviously there's issues with opioids in general, but you know, what are the bigger concerns that synthetic drugs bring into the mix?
You know, the synthetic opioids, so fentanyl and fentanyl analogs, they're extremely potent and highly addictive. And so what we're finding is just a small amount can contribute to overdoses. They also can be easily produced. And so therefore, it increases access. And so it's just a significant concern because we have gradually seen the numbers go up in terms of fentanyl involved in and contributing to overdoses that we're seeing across the country.
Now, the numbers that you have at this point are only a fraction of the COVID pandemic at this point. And you said that there has been a rise that you've seen at least up until mid-2021. You know, what do you see there in terms of these sorts of trends? What may be causing this rise? And how is the pandemic possibly adding to that?
Yeah, so, you know, one thing we're seeing, and we did actually include questions related to this on our NISDA, so that is the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. And what we found is that for individuals, so about 25.9 million past year users of alcohol and about 10.9 million individuals who use drugs within the past year, they reported that they were using substances a little bit more or much more than they did before the pandemic. And so we know in some instances, you know, people use substances as one strategy of coping. And so since we've seen the increase since the pandemic, certainly the pandemic can be increased or contributing to that increase. We also have other questions where people noted that they were using substances, in fact, to cope with the pandemic.
And, you know, we have seen a rise, and I realize this isn't your area of expertise necessarily, but a rise in severity of mental illness and issues with mental illness as loneliness and other side effects from the pandemic have come in. You know, does that have an effect on people who are using drugs either legally or illegally or, you know, taking more than prescribed and those sorts of opportunities, I guess?
It certainly could. I mean, we know the pandemic has contributed to a range of additional stressors in terms of, for some individuals, it might be loneliness or concerns about their job or their finances or their own health or the health of family members. And so we know there's this a range of additional stressors that people are experiencing. And for some individuals, it may be contributing to, in addition to what we're hearing, increased reports of anxiety and depression. But for some individuals, also increased use of substances as a strategy for coping.
As far as the long-term trends, was there ever a drop in these opioid uses, or are we just seeing a more exponential hike due to the COVID-19, or at least in the past year or two?
So certainly across the country within the past year, we've seen increases across the board. The rates of overdoses were increasing anyway, but what we found is that once the pandemic hit, the slope increased. It increased even further. So since the pandemic, we are seeing an increase in the accelerated, unfortunately, accelerated rates of overdoses.
Are there any specific concerns that you have regarding COVID and people who are using these drugs? Are they more susceptible to getting COVID, to having side effects? Are they at risk more than others?
I mean, we would certainly have to look at the data, about that over time. And certainly, we know that, data is continuing to come in terms of for individuals that have physical health conditions or compromised immune response or immune systems that may make them more likely or they may be at risk to be diagnosed or to get COVID. And so it's something to watch over time in terms of the impact of individuals who are using substances and if there are any increases or trends there that suggest higher rates of COVID as well. I've not seen that data, but certainly it's something to keep in mind and to think about in terms of our data and the trends that we're watching.
Sure. I wanted to move a bit toward the policy side of things. I realize that you're just coming into office, but what types of things regarding opioid use are you keeping your eye on? What are you keeping your eye on in terms of future data that will help inform you in these coming years?
So one thing that we're keeping our eye on, and we did, in fact, recently released a we call it NOFO, so Notice of Funding Opportunity for a harm reduction grant. And so what that is it's a grantees can apply for that to develop harm reduction services and supports at the community level to include purchasing fentanyl test strips so that people can test their substances. As well as other innovative community-based strategies for addressing overdose. So that's something that we're continuing to support harm reduction, and that is a change for the government, in terms of federal government having a dedicated, significant dedicated set of resources specifically for harm reduction. This is also part of the Secretary's overdose prevention strategy, which we released this past October. And it's a strategy that has four pillars. Harm reduction is one of those, and certainly we're continuing to work on implementing those different areas. The four pillars of the harm reduction, or excuse me, of the overdose prevention strategy are primary prevention, harm reduction, evidence-based treatment, and also recovery support.
And could you maybe dig in a little bit more into some of those other pillars? I'm really interested in, you said evidence-based treatment, and how does that help, and what sort of evidence are you using to ensure that people are getting the best treatment that they can possibly find?
So, when we say evidence-based treatment, the goal there is it's treatment or services and supports that our research and data shows that these strategies make a difference or these treatments make a difference. One area that we significantly support is medication-assisted treatment. The data shows that medication-assisted treatment, whether it be methadone or buprenorphine, can help to reduce cravings, can help in terms of again relieving cravings and normalizing, if you will, brain chemistry, and ultimately helping people move into long-term recovery. So we support medication-assisted treatment, as I mentioned, also recovery supports. That's another area that we're supporting through the overdose prevention strategy and with quite a bit of SAMHSA resources in this area as well, in terms of ensuring that people have opportunities to connect with other people in recovery, to receive mutual empowerment or peer support. It can help connect them to services and supports. And so that's another area that SAMHSA funds can be used to support.
And in terms of what you're looking at in future, do you have any strategies that you're currently working on? Any sorts of plans or anything else that you're kind of putting together to further this administration's push toward helping people with opioid addiction?
Yeah, so we're continually working on, in many ways, each of the areas within the overdose prevention strategy. So goal, of course, is to help increase access to services and supports, particularly medication-assisted treatment, as well as other services and supports that can make an impact. One thing that we have put in place that so for states are able to apply for, essentially it's a blanket exemption. So this was issued in March, a blanket exemption that will enable individuals who are stable on their treatment to be able to have take-home doses of medication, so methadone, and essentially it allows them to not have to come into the clinic daily. So for some individuals that helps in terms of transportation barriers, and people have felt very strongly that this is something that has helped in terms of supporting people in their recovery. So that's one area, and beyond the public health emergency, we are interested in continuing to find ways to keep that in place. Another area that we put in place is in terms of the buprenorphine guidelines. We did issue updated buprenorphine guidelines. That one thing we've been hearing is that some of the training requirements were a barrier. And so we did pull back the training requirements and have since seen a significant increase in the number of providers that are now certified to be able to prescribe buprenorphine. So again, that helps to increase access to services, and that's something that we'll continue to watch over time as well. So those are just two examples of areas that we're continuing to keep in place and look at over time.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Emergent BioSolutions. Our guest today is Miriam Delfin-Rittman, the Assistant Secretary for Mental Health and Substance Use for HHS. Welcome back to Federal Insights, sponsored by Emergent BioSolutions. I'm your moderator, Scott Massioni. Today we're speaking with Miriam Delfin-Rittman, the Assistant Secretary for Mental Health and Substance Use at HHS. And one of the biggest relationships, I guess would be the best word to describe it, is between the federal government and the state governments in order to ensure that the grants are out there, the money's going the right place, so that states can reach people. How are you working with states in order to ensure that policy is going in the right direction, that they can reach the people that they need, and that you can really work in tandem together rather than fighting in different and pulling in different directions?
So, we work very closely with states around the resources that we disseminate. So, for example, recently, through the American Rescue Plan, we did disseminate in total $3 billion, $1.5 billion to the Mental Health Block Grant, $1.5 billion to the Substance Use Block Grant. We work closely with states around how those resources are implemented and put in place. States often will have to implement evidence-based practices, and then there's data reporting related to that. We have project officers that work closely with the states. But then we also offer technical assistance, and that's an important part of our work as well. We want to be able to ensure that if states have questions about how to implement a particular evidence-based practice. We will offer technical assistance around a range of areas that they may have questions around. And so that's offered across the country for many of our grant awards. And we see that as an important part of the work that we're putting in place.
Are there any geographic areas where you're seeing the opioid crisis hit particularly? You know, in the beginning of this, we saw it a lot in the some more rural Appalachia area, but it has expanded. You know, are there areas now that are specifically hard hit?
You know, so you're right. We're seeing really across the country increases in overdose deaths, unfortunately. So we're seeing increases in rural areas and in urban areas and suburban. It's truly across the country. And we're also seeing increases in terms of methamphetamines, stimulants like methamphetamines as well. And so we're watching that. And in fact, our SOAR grant, so State Opioid Response Grant, we actually allow states to use those resources to be able to fund services and supports for stimulant use as well.
As far as funding goes, you know, are you feeling like you are getting the resources that you need? I understand that every federal agency would love to have more funding, but, you know, are you getting the enough resources that you need in terms of being able to send out grants? And where could you use funds more if you did have those sorts of resources?
Yeah. You know, so when we look at our resources, one thing that has been so helpful, and I'm so appreciative of this, is, you know, in terms of, well, for one, my previous role when I was a commissioner, but even now as assistant secretary, the administration has put significant priority in terms of addressing the behavioral health of the nation. So SAMHSA's budget, our budget has significantly increased. And some, I think overall has more than doubled in terms of the additional resources. So the resources in terms of the block grant, as I mentioned, has significantly increased. But then the other thing that we were able to disseminate to states, again, through the American Rescue Plan resources, is 100 grants, or we call them certified community behavioral health clinics. And so what these are their health clinics, again, across the country, that offer both mental health and substance use services. And we recently, again, funded an additional 100. So we have about 400 of them in total across the country. And so that's been a significant increase as well. And in fact, what we're hearing from a state perspective is that they so appreciate the resources and that in some instances, you know, their work is around, you know, getting the resources, you know, out the door because they have experienced such a significant influx.
In terms of relapsing, do you have any data on, you know, how people have been handling either relapses or if there's been an increase in relapses since the COVID-19 pandemic or even before that?
You know, so we don't actually collect data on relapse, but we do support, again, just a range of services and supports ultimately designed to help prevent relapse. So as I mentioned, medication-assisted treatment is one strategy, our recovery support, you know, services and supports that I mentioned, you know, in addition to the block grant, so both on the mental health and substance use side, the range of services that are put in place at the community level in terms of, in some instances, it might be employment or housing or case management, all of those services can help individuals in terms of you know, helping them to advance in terms of their recovery. So we don't collect relapse data, but rather collect and support rather, you know, services and programs to ultimately help prevent relapse.
I wanted to move a little bit toward some public service type talk. You know, there are resources out there for people who do overdose, and there are drugs out there that can help them. Would you mind just going over a few of the possibilities for people in terms of overdoses when they actually happen, and then resources that they might be able to reach out to if there is addiction?
Yes, yes, and thank you for that question. Yes, you know, there are resources that are available across the country. Again, our block grant, as well as our state opioid response grant funds, for example, naloxone across the country. Naloxone is an overdose reversing medication. It's available through most pharmacies, also many community health centers in some states have them, but certainly many pharmacies across the country have them. Naloxone, again, is an overdose reversing medication, and if somebody is in the midst of an overdose, naloxone can help to reverse that overdose. So that's a real important resource, for people to know about. And again, you can check your local pharmacy in terms of access. I think other resources that are important for folks to know about are the fentanyl test strips are available as well, and those can be used in terms of testing substances for fentanyl. In terms of actually accessing treatment, this is the other thing. I mean, there are SAMHSA has a website, and so if you go to findtreatment.gov, and that's findtreatment.gov, it has a listing of, again, various providers across the country, and so that's a valuable resource. Or people can call, for example, 1-800-662-HELP. Again, that's 1-800-662-HELP, and be connected with somebody that can then help connect them to services and supports. So those are important resources for folks to know about.
And you've mentioned these test strips a number of times and the importance of them. Could you talk a little bit more about why these test strips are needed? My assumption here is that people may not know exactly what is in the drug that they're using. So having an idea that if there is fentanyl in there would at least give someone the knowledge of how potent that drug would be.
That's exactly right. So again, and so the test strips can be used, as you mentioned, to test substances, to know what's in there, to know if there's fentanyl in there. Fentanyl is so strong that even a small amount for some individuals can contribute to overdose. So the test strips are used as one strategy to identify what's in the substance. But the other thing is often the sites that give out test strips. So in some instances, it might be a community mental health center, or community mental health or community substance use program. Often what a person will be given is, in addition to the fentanyl test strip, they'll be given information about, how to access services and supports, or where to go if they need help, and how to connect with, for example, or even a recovery coach if they want a recovery coach. And so often the sites we'll give them information about how to connect with other resources as well. So it's a way to plant important seeds as well.
I realize this is a very localized issue, but it's something that's been in the news quite a lot, is that some cities are opening up centers where people can safely, take drugs, and then, if they overdose accidentally, they can get the care that they need. Do you find that these centers can be possibly helpful for people in the future?
So, there currently are not any federally sanctioned sites, and I'm limited, in fact, with what I'm able to say,
Sure.
because I know there's litigation around this. But we're interested certainly in following the science, and we know there's been advocacy around this, so I certainly hear the advocacy. The science and looking at and reviewing the data here is important as well.
Just a couple more questions for you regarding the future. In the coming years, as you are taking your office and moving forward and developing your policies, what would you like to see, and what are some tangible goals that you would like to see in these few years that you have in office?
Now, so one thing I'm really excited about is, so we are in the midst of working on a major transformation in terms of crisis responsiveness across the behavioral health spectrum. So, as currently there is a suicide prevention lifeline, and in July 2022, that lifeline will be transferred over to a three-digit number, 988, which will become the new number for crisis responsiveness. And so we're excited about that because it's again, a major transformation in terms of crisis responsiveness and crisis care. Person can call that number, they'll be connected with a person in some instances if they need mold crisis to person to come out and meet with them. That will be the case, and then they'll be triaged from there. So really excited about that. At times 911 is called, and that may not be their best resource for folks. So now people will be able to call 988 if they're having a mental health or substance use related crisis. And so I'm really excited about that major transformation in how we think about crisis responsiveness for the country. So that's certainly one area that we're looking at. And some of the thinking is that can help to reduce suicides as well for individuals that are suicidal, knowing that there's help out there, that they're not alone. That can be a really valuable life-saving resource as well. So that's just one area. Another area that we're working on is sort of integrating primary care and behavioral health, so healthcare integration. And again, I've mentioned a certified community behavioral health clinics that we have across the country. And so that's a part of that initiative. Another area is addressing children and youth behavioral health. And we didn't talk about that so much, but we know that young people have struggled through the pandemic. And in fact, young people were having challenges before the pandemic. So that is an area of priority for us as well, addressing the behavioral health needs of children and youth, especially now as we see folks struggling through the pandemic. So those are just a few areas that are priorities. There are others as well, but those are just a few of my priorities.
That's about all the time we have today. You're listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Emergent BioSolutions. Our guest today was Miriam Delphin-Rittman, the Assistant Secretary for Mental Health and Substance Use at HHS. I'm your moderator, Scott Massioni. Thanks for listening.